Welcome to the Daily Wrap-Up, a concise show dedicated to bringing you the most relevant independent news as we see it from the last 24 hours. Wednesday, December 11th, 2019. Thank you for joining me today. Sorry, I'm rushing to the table here to get this show out for you today, and I messed up the time again, so there's probably plenty of people out there that think that I'm not starting for about an hour. I'm sure they'll come and figure it out. I apologize to all of them. For those that maybe know, in a general sense, we have our weekly show today with Brian on After Hours Live, starting right after this. If Brian, you're watching, I apologize. I think I'm going to be a little bit late. There's some things I really wanted to get into, and it's been a hectic day, but there is some important stuff to get into today. I have quite an interesting show for you that I'm going to try to get through reasonably quick and then jump over to join Brian before we can, you know, continue to talk about this and whatever else. But some pretty interesting stuff today. Things that you probably would not believe if I passed you on the street and told you this just happened. Such as, you know, Donald Trump using an executive order to basically say that Judaism is now a nationality. Right, because apparently the president of the United States can just determine these things for the entire world. More information about Iran and the official statement now that the Houthis are not an Iranian proxy, but yet the war in Yemen is going to keep going. I guess the reason and justifications to be determined, because that's what they said before, and more about Afghanistan and a couple of other things I'm going to get into today. But I want to quickly start off before I get into those to just do a quick shout out to people in general and just where I'm at and everything that's happening. I just was actually speaking with my family about this before I went live, and just the fact that I feel truly blessed with everything that's going on in my life, with all of you here in the chat, with everybody, every day that we do a show that just chooses to join me here and think for themselves and help people recognize what's going on around the world. I'm truly blessed to have this platform, this ability to jump on here and speak and have people at least entertain what I'm saying. And just the idea that there are good people out there in the world, people like you in this chat that take the time to think for yourselves and help other people that may not expect it, right? Every single day in our lives, you know that I've been dealing with things here, setting things up, such as the cable. And there was a person I dealt with today that really went above and beyond, just so far above and beyond, just because he wanted to help me. He wanted to make sure I got what I needed, not because he was going to make more for it or it was going to benefit him in some way, but just because he's a good person. There are people like that in the world. We have to see that on a daily basis and recognize that in fact, may be the majority, right? As they continue to tell us that everything's so bad and things are so dangerous. That is true. But I truly believe that we have the majority in the world of people that want to do good, that want to believe in the right people. All right. And again, to all of you supporters out there, whether you here in the chat or you out there listening somewhere, all you that are supporting me and allowing me to do what I do, I just couldn't do this without you. I feel truly blessed every single day to jump on here and do this. I just had to get that off my chest. It's such an important thing to say. But let's begin with the big topic here that I think is very important. I just couldn't believe that I saw this. And by the way, I'm going to start with just one quick screen share to show this. I know people are, and I agree, I'm very unhappy with the way the screen share comes across on this show. And then we'll get into the images I'll show you. But to begin, the first article from Times of Israel, Trump signs executive order combating anti-Semitism, labeling Jews as a nation, right? Making Judaism a nationality, which is alarming for many reasons. Right? And just right off the bat, people may not understand if you just don't know the ins and outs of this story. But when you begin to recognize what this is really about, it becomes quite nefarious. And before we even get into that, recognize the fact that there is no way any president has the right to just do this for the world, and then recognize that an executive order is, this is why I keep talking about ruling, you know, by one person signing a piece of paper, right? This is governing by executive order. That's what this is. Because an executive order is not meant to be mandates that hand down to the rest of the world or even the rest of the country. And by and large, they're supposed to be orders that predominantly affect the executive branch. Today, it's basically just taking the place of Congress, right? These are things that Congress are supposed to be doing, declaring wars and declaring all the things that are happening here. But even Congress, then, this would still not be authorized. No one has the right to just be like, okay, we're now naming this a nation for the world. We're now moving Jerusalem to the capital. We're now giving you the Golan Heights. We're now saying that illegal actions in the West Bank are not illegal, per se, right? This is what they continue to do. Now he signed an executive order for the world to say this. And all this really does, as I see it, is sign into law The inability to criticize Israeli government policy. That's what this is about. Or rather, one of the main two things that I see this being about. Because right now, people like myself that are calling out the Israeli government, they're killing innocent people. Oh, you're anti-Semite. Well, I was only talking about the government and their actions, not Jewish people at all, really. Oh, but you're anti-Semite because we knew you really meant everybody. This is the argument. But it completely ignores or removes the ability to actually criticize a government's policy, which is obviously paramount in any actual representative government, as we should know, as we're seeing quickly diminish here in this country as well. But what it does is sign into law, as Ron Paul always talks about, the fact that we're now not allowed to criticize Israel's government because now that's the Jewish people, right? That's what it is. Not that there aren't other people that, this is what's so frustrating, is that Israel houses a lot of different people. Obviously, they're trying to change that, the government, that is. But now we are saying that this is their nationality, right? As is like, I mean, there's many ways you could make this sound ridiculous by pointing out that you, just to arbitrarily name an entire group of religion, an ideology as a nation, is what they've been trying to do. That's the point of Zionism, to conflate the two and manipulate the story to be able to hide the actions of the government. Now, before I go on to the next part here, which is the next part that I find this ties in with BDS. This is what it really is about, at least at face value behind the scenes here. But just a quick update that I saw that I wanted to share here on the updates for Times of Israel. As you can see here, it says on right here, Gantz from 11 hours ago, Gantz says Israel going to third elections because Netanyahu wants immunity. Now, they are going to third elections, which is unprecedented and kind of ridiculous. But as this is coming from Gantz, this blue and white chairman, Benny Gantz, asserts that Israel is on its way toward a third election in under a year because of Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's desire to obtain parliamentary immunity in the light of three criminal indictments he's facing. So basically using this entire government and its elections to cover himself from crimes. And this is the person Trump's working with. This is the person that Trump is continuing to back. Even people within their own government think are bad. And Benny Gantz is no saint, understand. It's one of these people that's been part of all the horrible things happening in Gaza. But nonetheless, they even find Tim's actions to be just any number of words that come to mind. I just find that to be crazy. And recognize that even if that's not the primary motive, and I kind of think it is, it still is happening. If he were to get elected, this would basically make him immune from these charges. It's crazy, crazy stuff. But let's get on to the next article here. And this is the point that I think is very important. That, I mean, I really believe this comes down to stopping us from being able to criticize Israel, which is kind of one and the same at the end of the day. But this is the other main point, is to be able to stop people from participating in constitutionally protected acts of boycott, which is what they've always been trying to come after. We've been talking about it on the show for a long time, as it's entitled Trump Administration Citing Anti-Semitism on College Campuses to Interpret Judaism as a Nationality, which is exactly what just happened, the executive order that he signed, individually saying, I'm choosing this for the entire world. Or at least that's what they're saying, right? The world is not going to abide by this. At the very least, I mean, I would argue that executive order doesn't even apply to this country. It applies to the executive branch. But they're making this, there's executive orders are ruled by executive order today. Now, Donald Trump has signed this executive order claiming that Judaism is a nationality and not just a religion, which again is exactly what Zionism has tried to do over the years, conflate the two things. Now, just because a U.S. president signs an executive order does not mean it is now reality, despite how the mainstream media sells it and is right now, right? By the way, the same mainstream media that tells us that Trump is a Russian agent, yet then treats his executive orders as absolute decrees when they agree with it, that is, right? I'll let you work out that contradiction in your brain, right? Because, oh, well, he's a Russian agent working for the Kremlin, but, oh, we agree with this, so this is good, right? We don't make it like Trump did something good, but we still praise the action. But that's an action from a Russian agent reporting to you, right? Just recognize that's all nonsense. It's all fake divide. Now, the executive order will allow Trump to take further steps to combat what they are actually naming in this anti-Israel sentiments, right? Anti-Israel sentiments. That's what this is saying. But they're claiming this was about anti-Semitism, right? About Jewish people. But yet then they actually name it anti-Israel sentiment. So even within the actual document, they're already going in the direction that this is meant to achieve. right? That Israel and Jewish people are one and the same. You're not allowed to call out Israel's crimes, or even if, let's just say you don't think they're committing crimes, and if and when a crime occurs, or even just one of their officials carries something out, such as Netanyahu and his bribery charges, you're not allowed to point that out because that's anti-Semitic. That's what this does, which is crazy. As I've said numerous times, I've constantly been on the other side of this battle where I'm getting it from people on the other side of the extreme telling me that I'm helping the evil Israeli government because I'm not pointing out the problem, right? And that's ridiculous, right? The Jewish people are not the problem here. It's the group that has hijacked that and using it against everybody. Now, there's plenty of Jewish people, probably most of them, that are brainwashed by this, just like most people in this country and in the United States are brainwashed by the military-industrial complex to think that murdering people for freedom is something we should all cheer on and respect. It's the same thing. That doesn't mean there's not a big problem happening, but we cannot broad brush every single Jewish person. That's just stupid. But the point is, this is being done by nefarious people at the head of the Israeli Zionist government that is meant to stop you from being able to criticize their crimes. That's what this comes down to. And now saying it's anti-Israel sentiment, it's just tying it up in a neat little bow. Now, I was unaware that it's now somehow, you know, racist, according to them, to actually be against a specific nation, which is what they're saying, right? Anti-Israel sentiment. Not anti-Jewish sentiment, but anti-Israel sentiment. But I was unaware that it's racist to be against a specific nation. So by their own narrative, understand, it's actually racist now for Trump and Pompeo to be rabidly anti-Iran. Oh, but I guess that somehow only applies to Israel. But if you say their government gets special treatment, well, then you're a racist. Now, the executive order will also allow Trump to specifically go after what they named divestment movements on college campuses, which is BDS, which you know that, by requiring colleges and universities to treat those movements as discriminatory in order to keep their funding, right? So this is where the meat of it comes out, where it turns out, in other words, they're extorting the power structure of these colleges, which, you know, by signing an executive order as if you're doing it for good reasons, you're extorting these power structures at the colleges, which depend largely on government funding, and forcing them, whether they want to or not, to disregard the constitutional rights of their students. That's what this is. And remember that the only reason most of Congress said that they opposed the BDS, the movement, was because of the two-state solution. We talked about this. Oh, they're inherently contradictory, which we now know is never happening. The two-state solution is gone, yet they still attack the BDS movement, which should show you that it wasn't really about that sidestepping argument. It was about the fact that they are being, you know, the lobbyist groups are influencing these politicians to be against something that's inherently constitutional. And by the way, four different federal judges have ruled unconstitutional to stop us from participating in a constitutionally protected boycott movement. But apparently, four judges that rule on this don't matter to the members of Congress whose very oath says that they're supposed to uphold that Constitution, right? But they don't care about that, apparently. They're attacking this because it's racist. That's just the simple, that's why just hate speech and racist and all these things are just they just a scapegoat. You just use them and just sweep away logic. That doesn't mean that there's not hate and that there's not racism. We know those things exist. But by the way, there's already laws in the books to fight those things. These new things are meant to combat things that aren't connected to it, but they use this as cover. That's what this is really about. Now, and really recognize how nefarious this is to use this law, manipulate the law in order to manipulate these colleges to stop them from supporting BDS movements, or at the very least, allowing them to exist whether or not they support them. They are forcing these colleges to violate these people's constitutional rights by signing an executive order and doing this for a foreign country. Because understand, right, they're making this about Israel, the government. They're the ones doing that. But which is what it's really about. But now they're just making it about one and the same. So now they're actually stopping people for doing this for another country. Talk about meddling. Talk about influence and talk, you know, Russian meddling. Now, the BDS movement, for those that don't know, it stands for Boycott, Divestment, and Sanctions. And this specifically aims to end international support for Israel's oppression of Palestinians. It's quite simple. Now, the boycott and basically boycott Israel for its activities in the West Bank and Gaza and all the things we've talked about. Because they're illegal. And we have every right to boycott those things and boycott the sales and profit from the goods of Palestinians that are being stolen, right? That's what any honest person should be doing. What they try to make it out to be is the lie. Now, Trump's executive order would trigger a portion of the Federal Civil Rights Act of 1964 that requires educational institutions receiving federal funding to not discriminate based on national origin, according to senior administration officials, right? So that doesn't apply if it's only about, if you know, in the sense we're looking at it today, right? If you're a Jewish person, it doesn't necessarily apply. Now, the Department of Education can withhold federal funding from any college or educational program that discriminates based on race, color, or national origin, according to the Civil Rights Act. Now, of course, religion is not covered in that portion of the law. So the administration would have to interpret Judaism as a nationality in order to potentially punish universities for violations, right? So essentially they said, oh, well, the law doesn't apply the way that Israel wants it to, so let's just change the law, right? Because that's what honest people do, right? We don't actually find out whether or not, I mean, the Americans are supporting of it or anything. The fact is it's unconstitutional, so it shouldn't matter. But all they do is just say, oh, we need to change the law to make this the way it is. Well, then we're just going to write an executive order and change the law. We're just going to change what this means. Now, the definition of anti-Semitism will apparently be adapted from the State Department. Administration officials were speaking with the New York Times and said that ultimately the definition that they've been using that's been bastardized in and of itself, right? The entire definition of anti-Semitism has been changed and manipulated from something that does not mean what it should mean or what it has meant, right? This, they've constantly been trying to blend these things to make it specifically cover for the Israeli government. Now, again, to be clear, there's obviously anti-Semitism and no one should be okay with that kind of hate in any sense. But that doesn't mean we're not allowed to criticize governments because you say that I am a certain way, even though none of my actions are even close to that. Just because you glean what you think I'm doing. I mean, it's ridiculous. So they are literally altering laws right in front of us to suit the needs of Israel's government. This is what special treatment looks like, ladies and gentlemen. Meanwhile, innumerable important issues could have been dealt with instead in this time frame, right? But once again, the U.S. government is putting Israel first. It's pretty simple. Now, Jared Kushner, the president's son-in-law and senior White House advisor, pushed for the executive order. Big surprise. Now, part of the story that the mainstream media will surely leave out, by accident, I'm sure, is the numerous Jewish groups and Jews individual Jews and Jewish groups that are openly calling this an attack on free speech. Weird how that works, right? The very people that they're saying they're trying to protect, and we have Jewish groups and individual Jews standing up and saying that this is an attack on free speech, right? You guys have no right to do this. Now, Jeremy Ben-Ami, the president of J Street, a progressive Jewish advocacy group, argued that the executive order was designed to have a chilling effect on free speech and to crack down on campus critics of Israel rather than fight anti-Semitism. He says, quote, "We feel it is misguided and harmful for the White House to unilaterally declare a broad range of nonviolent campus criticism of Israel to be anti-Semitic." Right? But I'm sure that they'll just miss that whole part of the argument, sort of how they pretend that there's no one in Venezuela that supports Maduro. There's no one in Syria that supports Assad. That doesn't exist, even though it's most of the population. Right? But they just choose to ignore that entire group of people. Such as in this case, where all these Orthodox Jews inside of Israel and all these different groups that constantly call out the Zionist problem, that constantly call out the crimes of Israel. And actually, as I've shown on this very show, they call them anti-Semitic. Orthodox Jews, they're calling anti-Semitic because they don't support the Israeli government. Talk about clown world. That's crazy. This is where we're getting to, though, you see, because you have to blindly support the government, sort of like in this country, lest you be named anti-Semitic, or here, be named un-American. It's the same agenda, and I'm hoping you guys can begin to see that. Now, I'll follow up on this if this changes, but I can argue this is just, I promise this is going to continue the same way. We're going to now see this being rolled into attacking BDS movements all across the country. They're going to continue to shut this down, and I can promise you what it's going to do is create more people are going to begin to pay attention to the problem. It's kind of the Streisand effect, I would argue, but they don't seem to care because all they're going to do is censor and shut us down even more. This is the reality. And especially with this next story, based on how many times they lie about these things and get caught, it seems like that's their only recourse at this point, to just keep us quiet. This is coming from Anti-War. U.S. no longer considers Yemen's Houthis an Iranian proxy. Now, we just talked about this story, about the basically, it was Esper kind of hinting at this idea and saying it as much. But now the Trump administration has officially announced, like we've been saying all along, that they no longer consider the Houthis in Yemen to be a proxy of the Iranian government, which I think is funny how they're saying no longer, right? As if something has changed, which, by the way, nothing has changed, right? There's no shift in allegiances here. It's not like this is what they want you to think without saying it, that, oh, well, something shifted and now they're no longer an Iranian proxy. Success. I would love to see them in the next few days come out as if this was a success like they did in Iran, right? The lack of action that we see shows the proof that we won, right? It's just stupid. Nothing happened, you mean, right? But so this is the same idea. If they come out later and say, we won in Yemen because, look, they're no longer a proxy. They never were. And by the way, their own documentation has always shown that, as I've always pointed out on this very show. But now they've officially said this, which, again, seems to be a kind of a quick, short-sighted, reactionary move, as has kind of become a common practice for their administration. And this was in response to Saudi Arabia backing down and dealing with the Houthis, right? Because they suddenly need to shift because they're looking bad and how it's all going forward. And it's clear to me that the mainstream media is still very much on the Iran and Yemen narrative. As the article reads, the Trump administration denies that it's fighting Iran and Yemen. I just love how they framed that. I mean, how funny for them to frame it this way, right? I mean, if it's some nameless, faceless official that no one can see, no one can verify, stating something that goes along with their narrative, well, then they run without question on that story. But when we get an official statement right from the White House, which we should doubt as well, but of course it goes against their narrative, well, we get this article, right? Where it's like the opposite. They state the opposite in the headline with nothing to run on. But what do they need sources for? The mainstream media lies about things every day. But what the Trump administration failed to consider here, it seems anyway, is that the entire U.S. involvement in this illegal war was based on the baseless claim that Iran was in Yemen. That's it. But now they just said that's not the case. So two thoughts on this, really. To be honest, I have about a million thoughts on this, but two that I'm going to share right now. One, what does this mean for all the other, it's Iran, we're certain, but we can't prove it, claims coming from the U.S. government right now, right? All the things about all the Iran tankers and the Lipit mines and everything they've been claiming that they haven't proven, as they're now coming back up a claim that they literally used to murder people in Yemen. What are we supposed to do now? We should be doubting everything that they've said about Iran, and everything in general, I would argue, but everything that they've used and said about Iran to justify action should be immediately discounted, because they just showed us that they were lying and using a lie to kill people. And number two, on that same point, apparently the U.S. government is more than willing to starve an entire nation, killing millions of people, based on either a lie, which is what I think it was, or at very least an assumption. Either way, they just contradicted the very claim that they've been using to justify creating and continuing the world's worst humanitarian crisis for half a decade or more. It's just that easy to just put it aside, even though they now have nothing that justifies why they're there, but we won't get into that, right? That's something that mainstream media will never talk about. They can't even talk about the war in general. This whole thing was in spite of the Houthis having, you know, substantial ideological differences with Iran. Basically zero contact and not even being the same type of Shiites. But yet they still up until this point said that they were an Iran proxy. I've continued to show you that previous State Department cables outright stated that the Houthis were not an Iranian proxy. They've been lying to you knowingly this whole time and killing people based on that lie. And now they just kind of casually say, oh, well, now they're not anymore. Are they going to be held accountable for all the things they did based on that lie? All the things they allowed Saudi Arabia to do without repercussions? I mean, it's amazing the ability of Americans to just march forward without taking even the moment to look back. Now, the U.S. did not explain their change in stance, of course, but it may reflect Saudi Arabia's ongoing peace talks with the Houthis, as the U.S., right, couldn't possibly support a peace deal that involved an actual Iranian-linked faction, right? So maybe the point is that they did this in anticipation of the fact that the Saudis have obviously lost this war that the U.S. is leading. So this is the point. So suddenly the Saudis know that they can't beat what's happening, what's coming from the Houthis. They've already shown that multiple times. So now they're obviously looking to make a peace deal, probably without the U.S. So the U.S. is saying, well, crap, we have to basically remove that claim because we can't make it look like we're dealing with Iran while we're in the middle of making a war against Iran, right? So there you go. At the end of the day, arguing that the Yemen war has something, anything to do with Iran was the only real justification that the U.S. had offered to us for them to get involved in the conflict in the first place. And if the Saudis don't manage to resolve the conflict diplomatically, which is almost probably impossible for them, seeing as how they know that they've already lost this war, it will be all the harder for the U.S. to justify its continued involvement in the war if suddenly now they're fighting them again, and now you just said they're not an Iran proxy, but yet you're still in the war, which is, I promise, what's going to happen. Right now, they no longer have justification. All they're going to do is just be like, oh, you know, terrorism or something, right? Oh, well, we're going to liberate these people now. Right? So suddenly the narrative changes, but the objective remains the same, just like everything else. Well, you see, they just never seem to think this far ahead these days. Unless, of course, it involves coups or regime changes. And even then, I mean, they seem to be actively decreasing their foresight. That's just my take. But to follow up a bit more on the topic from yesterday on the National Defense Authorization Act, this is very important. Coming from anti-war, leadership strips approved anti-war measures from the NDAA. Now, we briefly touched on this yesterday. And we discussed that Senator Bernie Sanders and Ro Khanna condemned the bipartisan compromise as, quote, a bill of astonishing moral cowardice. It's a strong statement. Now, the House version of the 2020 National Defense Authorization Act reportedly set aside an irresponsibly large amount of money just for military spending. Right? This is what it looks like when you're ending the endless wars, right? But it also originally added some anti-war amendments and other very basic limitations, you know, that we as Americans should be able to expect will be included, yet were actually the first to go. Now, the House and Senate versions have now been reconciled into a final bill. And essentially all of the limitations that the House actually voted on and approved were simply stripped away. Just like that. All your representation, all the representative government and illusions of democracy, they voted and it happened and we voted them in and they're supposed to vote for what we want and then they just remove it. It doesn't matter. The leadership and then even the executive branch, gone. They just do what they want. Executive orders, removing. This is the faux democracy that we're always being shown, right? All these things that we actually want, which is like the end of wars and to stop these executive branch or of any administration from being able to just to wield war whenever they want. Yeah, those things were just quickly removed. No big deal. All, of course, in favor of a $738 billion bill that continues the spending, but makes absolutely no attempt to rein in the military in any legitimate way. You know, exactly like every American basically wants right now. This is the frustrating part that we need to keep seeing, that there is no representation here. Americans have wanted very specific things that we all could point to for decades, and they never do it. How do we not see what that means? Right? This is not really, they take the wins they can to do something that benefits them too, that also makes it look like they're fighting for what we want. But at the end of the day, it's insultingly obvious that they do not have to do what we want. And they regularly don't. It's something like wars continue no matter what, because we're not the ones they're answering to. Now, the House bill had included text about ending U.S. military involvement in Yemen. Something that both houses had attempted to do in, you know, War Powers Act resolutions and other things that were previously vetoed by President Trump. Right? Again, showing you the success of democracy, that all of everything can work and all the people agree and all sides of Congress want it. And each goes, nope, I don't want it. Me, the president individually doesn't want this, so I'm just going to veto it. After everybody else did. Obviously, it was because of his ties to Saudi Arabia and the fact that there was money being made. But all of that text about Yemen, removed, gone, no longer there. Even as they have admitted the lie of Iran involvement in Yemen, which was the only justification for even being there. Yet they still fight to keep going in this war. Why? There's no justification for it. How do they now justify this war? They don't have one. They'll come up with something, I'm sure. But it's insulting to watch as they don't have that justification, yet still fight to maintain the illegal war. Now, there was text that said that any U.S. attack on Iran could only come with the passage of an authorization for the use of military force against Iran, you know, from Congress. Yeah, that was completely removed. This aimed to forbid an unauthorized attack on Iran. You know, the thing that basically every American wants. And why would you want that to be removed? Well, if you want to be able to carry out a preemptive attack on Iran, You know, the good old preemptive self-defense, U.S. edition. Now, while theoretically the president is meant to be forbidden from unauthorized attacks like that, that's just not the way recent administrations have been acting and pretending to interpret the law, meaning that they either bastardize and intentionally misinterpret it or just ignore it altogether. Democracy, right? The bill also removes language that that forbade the Pentagon from researching, as we've talked about many times on this show, low-yield nukes. Now, again, obvious military-industrial complex reasons why this was removed, right? Because we want to be able to use more nuclear weapons and potentially make more war because the military-industrial complex makes all the money. Now, many have justifiable concerns that this would mean, obviously, the usage of such arms would become more common. That's why they're low-yield, more usable. That's what Trump's already said himself. It's disgusting that this is something that no Americans want more nuclear weapons being used. They don't care. Everything that was removed was aimed at giving Congress more specific say on how the military is to carry out certain operations. And more importantly, certain things that it is absolutely not to do. You know, the most important job of Congress that's been ignored for decades? That. In the end, more or less, all of this was stripped away completely, even backing away from border wall restrictions that were one of the first things put in place on the House bill. Now, language, of course, sanctioning Russia for building a natural gas pipeline to Germany that's entirely legal, of course, well, that survived because Russia, bad guy. And the bill even gives the administration its long-sought Space Force. More military spending, hooray, because that's what Americans want, right? We don't have water, clean water in Flint, Michigan, and we're creating a Space Force military. I mean, this is just unbelievable. Understand that this pipeline is completely legal, and even working with Germany, who's an ally of the United States, there's nothing wrong with that act in any way. And this is just the U.S. just attacking and sanctioning people because they don't do what the U.S. wants. Or even worse, because they do something that benefits their adversary, which is not illegal. I mean, you could argue if they were doing something in a way that was, you know, around the law or some kind of way that was dangerous or immoral, then you could maybe make this argument. But it's nothing of the kind. It's agreed upon with UE nations and Russia and this gas pipeline that's very much closer to the European Union. And just because Russia can benefit, the Donald Trump administration is attacking them and sanctioning them. Even potentially Germany, they've said. For what? Because they are not getting a piece of the pie. That's not what democracies do. That's not what legitimate governments do. That's what dictatorships, that's what authoritarian governments do. And also building space forces when nobody else is doing that. Now, the final and toothless NDAA bill, the National Defense Authorization Act bill, passed the House today. They all agreed. Oh, we removed everything we said we wanted except the military spending. Hooray! 377-48. And they will likely pass the Senate some days later, I have no doubt. And it will almost certainly be signed by the president. So, yet again, another year full of nonstop illegal wars with nothing to rein it in. And as they all look the other way, as the Yemeni people continue to suffer and use the two-party illusion as cover, don't forget what's happening there. And you will not hear about this on the evening news because they have been instructed to ignore it. I think we have to acknowledge how obvious that is. 1,000 Yemeni children die daily due to Saudi-led attacks, according to the health minister. 1,000 people a day. Children. Why would this not be on the news? Right? This has been acknowledged by the UN. It's the world's worst humanitarian crisis, according to the United Nations. And this is all being done and happening because of the U.S. government in Saudi Arabia and Israel, for that matter. As we just found out that Israel's been there from day one. Shocking, I know. 1,000 children a day. And now the U.S. is there based on the lie that Iran was there, but they just admitted that Iran is not there. And yet they're still going. And they removed the restrictions from the Yemen war on the NDAA. How does that make sense? It only makes sense if this is a corrupt, fraudulent, lying government. That's what makes sense. And even as they retract their Houthi lie, being an Iran proxy, yet fight to keep the Yemen genocide going, the U.S. government is still citing Iran and Yemen to justify sanctions against other people. They just really hope that you're just not paying attention. Like, as they counter one of their arguments and then continue to use it. Washington expands sanctions against Iran's largest airline, accusing it of weapons of mass destruction proliferation. Now, it says the Trump administration has levied new sanctions against Iranian companies, including its largest airline, Mehan Air, which they are accusing of weapons of mass destruction proliferation and transportation of lethal aid to Yemen. I mean, it's classic. And if you were hoping for evidence of any kind to verify that, you must be thinking of another government. They provide nothing to verify this claim. It says, quote, the Iranian regime uses its aviation and shipping industries to supply its regional terrorists and military groups with weapons directly contributing to the devastating humanitarian crises in Syria and Yemen, according to Secretary of Treasury Steven Mnuchin. Right? No, see, he doesn't say what terrorists or what militant groups or what weapons. Nothing definitive at all, right? They might as well just say they do bad things in places. That's about as much as you're getting from that. Nothing to verify any of it. But that's nothing surprising, right? This is the same thing they've been doing. Targeting individuals, and we just talked about this, targeting individuals in Iran because they think that they might be part of something. I mean, and Yemen, really? Like, they're claiming Yemen right now. They're really back. They really need you to not pay attention, because if you even slightly look into this stuff, it falls apart. They're actually right now claiming that their argument for why they're in Yemen in the first place is that Iran is not there. Iran is not the proxy of the Houthis, which is what they've been claiming. But yet, nonetheless, they still turn around the same day and use the argument of Iran being in Yemen to sanction Iran. I mean, you just can't get more stupid than that. Now, this airline has been the target of Washington's restrictions ever since 2011. So obviously they've been going after this, right? And has been repeatedly accused, this airline, by the U.S. of having deep ties with the Iranian Revolutionary Guard Corps and regularly transporting its troops and hardware around the region. Gee, I don't know. I'd have to think about that one for a second. I wonder if this Iranian airline has ties with the Iranian government. That must be nefarious and evil. I mean, how ridiculous. This is what they're claiming, that they're attacking this airline because they've repeatedly accused it of having deep ties to the Iran military. Being an Iran airline, I mean, this only makes it bad if just Iran bad guy. I mean, if you were suddenly saying that the Israeli airline had ties to the Israeli government, or the Israeli military, does that sound, maybe it does with that, but let's just say France. Let's just say the France military had a tie with a French airliner. Does that sound nefarious? It's ridiculous that they try to make it sound, but they, just because they say Iranian Revolutionary Guards are terrorists, which is their military, part of it anyway, because they say that, very normal things that everyone else does suddenly become bad. It's just really ridiculous. I mean, who right now would like to list for me in the chat all the U.S. corporations that have open and unnatural ties with the U.S. government today? I could list them all day long. How about just list for me in the chat just the airlines that have ties to the U.S. military? I mean, what hypocrisy, right? I mean, to suggest that an Iranian airline group, a company having ties to the Iran government is somehow wrong or even unusual would obviously make the U.S. just as wrong. And that's assuming that their allegations are even true, since they never even proved their claims. I mean, it just gets ridiculous. Now, this time the airline was sanctioned under, guess what, an executive order, which targets, quote, proliferators of weapons of mass destruction and their supporters. You know, all the things that they haven't proven. Now, it was not immediately clear at all how exactly the company engaged in such activities, because nothing was provided or proved, no proof of the claim whatsoever. And I even just showed, again, how they were sanctioning Iranian, I believe they're businessmen, Iranian individuals tied to the military, which they said in their own report that they believe that they were involved. I mean, that's crazy. That is rampant lawlessness. They don't even know for sure, but they're just going to sanction them anyway. A professor at the University of Tehran, Saeed Mohammed Mirandi, says that the allegations that the airline has been proliferating WMDs in some fashion are ridiculous. The new restrictions are yet another attempt to harm the Iranian people, who are the real target of the economic war, despite claims from Washington that it only seeks to attack the Iranian authorities. He says, quote, it's ridiculous, and everyone knows it's ridiculous. The United States is engaging in economic warfare against Iran and its ordinary Iranians. Because, by the way, as I've said, that's what sanctions are designed to do, as their own documentation makes unbelievably clear. And to end today, A quick point on how even when we know the mainstream media are not being, they're just not to be trusted in general, we all still somehow allow them to set the conversation. And we see this with Afghanistan. And it is frustrating, and it should be, that we allow this to happen. Now, this coming from Responsible Statecraft is entitled, "The Afghanistan Papers Highlight the Systemic Rot in U.S. Foreign Policy Making." Now, how long have I been talking about Afghanistan, talking about all this stuff, right? I mean, it's frustrating that we still let them set the tone. Now, this article reads, it says, "There is a laundry list of reasons for why the U.S. foreign policy establishment comes up short on so many occasions. A total and complete absence of accountability in the industry ensures that those who demonstrate poor judgment are protected from punishment and allowed to repeat it." I mean, think about that. I mean, this is exactly what we're talking about. And this is we even have the precedent of Vietnam. We know that they've done this in the past, and yet we just allowed ourselves to be ignored again. Now it says, "In this harsh political climate, politicians have an incentive to double down on the status quo rather than admit mistakes. And an aversion to the smallest reform in Washington, D.C. means that it's easier to simply go along to get along, even if doing so compounds failure." So basically just ignoring the problem and allowing Americans to die so they can, you know, succeed as a politician. And they know that. And now we all should know that beyond a shadow of a doubt. And it goes on to say, "But so much of what goes wrong in U.S. foreign policy today can be traced back to a lack of good old-fashioned common sense. For one reason or another, pragmatism has become an endangered species inside the Beltway and is often overshadowed by a gospel that the United States has the strength, power, and fortitude and perseverance to bend other countries, friend and foe alike, to its will." How spot on is that? It says the political and policy class remains captive, but captivated by their own intellect and driven by assumptions that turn out to be hollow, shallow, and counterproductive. And I would simply add, some of which are just flat out willful lies, like we're seeing in regard to Afghanistan. I mean, what's most frustrating to me is that this is exactly, and I mean exactly, what I've been saying for years, and many other people for that matter, even about Afghanistan specifically. And I was called un-American for doing so. Even still called as much right now, even while we now have proof that this is the case. How infuriating. Now, the rot in U.S. foreign policy must be acknowledged, especially as they try to make this only about Afghanistan, as opposed to the reality that all of their wars are the same. Afghanistan was sold to us the same way. Liberating the people, spreading freedom, fighting terrorism. And, well, taking some lithium, oil, and opium for our trouble, right? Yet we now know that was a lie all along. So why in the world would we trust another word coming out of their mouths? And why would we not immediately question every other claim about every other war? Because this was not some wishful thinking, as the Brookings Institute basically dutifully and embarrassingly tried to claim. The evidence proves this was the government knowingly lying to us, knowing this couldn't be won from the very beginning, and allowing Americans to die nonetheless. Because this was not about winning anything. It was always about permanent occupation. And they continued to fund that all the way along. Now, for the last part I want to share with you here before I leave is just the admission coming from an former Afghanistan president, who tells the Associated Press that the U.S. cash fed the corruption all along. Says Afghanistan's former president argued Tuesday that Washington helped fuel corruption in his nation by spending hundreds of millions of dollars over the past two decades without accountability. Right? That's your tax dollars. In the interview with the Associated Press, he responded to findings from a trove of newly published documents, the ones we've all talked about, that show that they lied to us. And the documents confirm his long-running complaints about U.S. spending. And this is coming from a person that worked in that administration under the U.S. government. The point is, everything, and I mean everything, points to the fact that the U.S. government actively misled, lied to the American people to maintain an unwinnable war. Everything except the officials telling you right now that that's just not the case. And this is one of those moments, ladies and gentlemen, where you can choose to pull yourself free of the propaganda machine. There's a crack in the door. And yes, it might be a little uncomfortable at first. Or you can choose to blindly accept the forceful assertions of government officials that run contrary to all the evidence and just go back to sleep. I hope that you will choose wisely. Thank you for joining me today. And I'm sorry, Brian, if you're watching. I'm jumping over right now. If you guys all want to come join me over on After Hours Live, the link will be in the show notes when I get done. We'll be talking about plenty of more important things. I love you all, as always. Question everything. Come to your own conclusions. Stay vigilant.
What was that?
There will be a briefing.
No briefing. Anyway, welcome to the State Department. I think we have some interns in the back. Welcome. Good to see you in this exercise and transparency in democracy.